Hey, Three Song Stories listeners, it's Kate Scales. If you listen to my episode, you'll know my voice. I'm here with the crew from Three Song Stories, and they're here to tell you why you need to pledge.
That's right. It is our membership campaign that we are in right now, and that is the reason that we are here asking for your support. We make Three Song Stories in these awesome studios at WGCU, but we couldn't do it if we didn't have listeners out there who were supporting our overall mission. So do your part now and call the number 1-800-533-9428. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Mike, and hello, listeners. Again, we're going to take a quick break before the show here and remind you that if you haven't given before, this is a great time to do it. If you're a fan of the podcast and you've never given to public radio, this should be the gateway for it for you. It's a great way to support the programs that you listen to, like Three Song Stories, and the programs that other people who live around you in Southwest Florida also listen to. So the number again is 800-533-9428, or you can go online to wgcu.org/radiouninterrupted, or if you're listening on the app, on the WGCU app, you can give right through the app, so you don't even have to leave. You can just keep listening to this, and then you can donate.
If you enjoy all the Three Song selfies, all of the behind-the-scenes content, and all the cool stuff, including everything we had with Kate Scales, that's episode 21 if you haven't listened yet, go ahead and support the station, support WGCU and the songs and the stories that you love to listen to. Again, 1-800-533-9428, or go online to wgcu.org/radiouninterrupted.
Keep listening.
1, 2, 3.
Welcome to Three Song Stories, the podcast that uses musical memories to bring out our guests' personalities and personal histories. We like to call it biography through music. I'm Mike Canary. Thanks for listening. My guest this episode is John Lasciutto. He's been director of the Florida Gulf Coast University Art Gallery since 2014. Before that, he was registrar of the Hagerty Museum of Art at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Over the years, he's taught art and design. He's curated many art exhibits. He's reviewed exhibits and theater productions and juried exhibits. That's the person who picks which pieces wind up in group shows. And he worked at Theater X in Milwaukee for about a year. He's also an artist himself and has had a number of solo exhibits and participated in many group exhibits over the years. The fact that this intro has the word exhibit in it so many times is definitely indicative of John's career. He's immersed in the world of art and the support of it, both personally and institutionally, which is right up my alley, so I look forward to exploring how music fits into his life's puzzle. Hey there, John. How's it going?
It's nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
It's good to finally have you in here after having bumped into you on campus and pitched this idea to you, which at first you looked at me like I was crazy, and then you came back later and you were like, I think I want to do this.
It had to sink in. You know, you gave me the idea and I said, wow, it's fascinating, but you know, what do I actually do with that? And it took me, I think, 2 months to figure that out.
We will get into your process here in a little bit. What was the musical background of your childhood?
None. I grew up in a house that – I was thinking about this the other day, and that's what this whole project has spawned me to do or inspired me to do is, you know, my parents told me early on that the reason why they didn't have a record player or any kind of music in the house is because prior to my awareness of this, I think they were robbed and their records and their record player were stolen, and they decided not to reinvest. So it was this really strange void that I didn't understand.
So let's dig into that a little further. So that's like legit? Like your parents? Like somebody came and stole your parents' music and they thought, well, that's it for music.
Yes. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
And I haven't thought about it because no one really asks you about, you know, that part of your life. And I've only heard that story from them once. So, you know, memory is tricky. So I got to go back and, at some point and ask them, is that really what I remember?
Having? Where was this?
Well, we moved around a lot growing up, so it may have been in Missouri or Florida. I don't know.
Oh, so Milwaukee is where your resume mostly is centered, but that's somewhere you wound up?
I think – okay, so I was born in St. Paul, Minnesota, and then at some point we moved to Illinois, Florida, Indiana, Missouri, then out to California, Alabama, and then Wisconsin.
Military?
No. My father was just chasing career.
Huh.
Chasing a career, yeah.
What kind of career?
food service.
Okay.
Vending machines and, you know, industrial food service.
Real quick, where in Missouri and where in Florida? Because I've lived
Gainesville.
Gainesville, okay.
And I'm not sure, but I think outside of St. Louis.
Okay. So if you don't really have much of a deep musical memory as a background for your childhood, what is your earliest musical memory?
Okay. So I was thinking about that too. So Born to Run was a tape that I got. And I looked at that and I said, well, I have no interest in that whatsoever. That was the first musical tape my parents gave me, I think like age 10 or 9 or something like that. And so I didn't even want to listen to it. And then I think the alternative to that may have been like U2, I think, early U2 albums.
Hmm. Yeah. And so you don't have any like little, like when you were in elementary school kind of, I guess 10 years old.
Whatever was played in school.
Right.
Know, whatever you know, the teachers tell you to dance along.
Can you remember the first time music moved you or that you were swept away by it somehow?
I think those U2 albums, those early Boy and those are other early U2 albums probably.
So U2 was sort of formative for you?
Yeah.
Musically?
At age 10, 11, 12, something like that.
And that Born to Run tape was the first thing that you owned?
The first thing I saw that I rejected. And now
what was it that you – did you listen to it before you rejected it?
No,
I just – Did you think it was an exercise tape?
No, I thought it was like American propaganda. I didn't know to use those words, but there's something that just seemed distasteful about it, you know. It just didn't jive with me.
Hmm. Did you ever make mixtapes?
Yes. Yeah, I did that quite a bit. And then there was – I worked at a restaurant for quite a while in my early 20s. And someone there was really interested in making mixtapes. And so we would exchange mixtapes. He was an aficionado with music, like loved the rare, you know, unusual.
And this was tapes. This would have been – you're old enough for the tape world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you remember any of the songs that would have been on that era of mixtape?
I think some Zappa. I think some I know that for sure. Maybe Steve Reich. It was like the more obscure stuff. Like, okay, how can I give you something that you haven't heard before that will make you think or make you come back and have a conversation with me?
Did you ever use them to try to woo?
No. This was a guy that
I worked
with.
I didn't know if it was broader than just that one.
I'm sure I made other mixtapes, but that's the one that stuck out because I think there was like a set of four and they almost became like these collector items. Like, wow, you know, this guy really loves music so much that he, you know, is investing in these mixtapes.
How did you wind up in the arts and in the world of arts? If you said you were working at a restaurant in your early 20s, sort of give us the arc from your
– The short bio?
Yeah.
So I think I remember when I was in Alabama, went to a magnet school, you know, where they were trying to – you know, government or the city was trying to figure out how to integrate communities. And so they created this school that, you know, had a great art program in order to get white communities to, you know – move into or to send their kids to black communities. And so that, I think, was, you know, the real serious art introduction to me, going to that magnet school.
Did you then study art in college?
I did. So
what level of art? Because I know you've done everything from making it to raising money for it and everything in between.
Right. So I got my master's in fine art and painting and drawing. So I got my bachelor's, my master's, and then, you know, along the way, just a lot of curating and, you know, getting together with people in the community and creating performances and exhibitions and all kinds of stuff.
What about music, you know, musical theater productions or musical dance?
So, you know, when I was also growing up in Alabama, we went to church quite a lot, to Lutheran church. And I remember being in some choir or something like that. And there was this moment, you know, we were singing a song and this whoever was leading it, you know, was very – particular about how I could not sing. I couldn't, you know, match the notes. So that kind of, you know, put a squash on my enjoyment of, you know, participating in music. But then when I went to college, I took guitar, a couple of courses of guitar, and that, you know, gave me the foundation to come back to it. And I still, you know, just for myself, you know, love going home and, you know, playing guitar and learning songs that I've enjoyed over the
acoustic
years. Mm-hmm. Acoustic, yeah.
Do you have more than one guitar?
I have a couple, yeah.
Electric at all?
No, I've tried, but I think my skill level is, for me anyway, is basic enough where the acoustic is more than I can handle.
Any other instruments ever enter your life?
I've tried violin.
Hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, that seems like something that would be fun to try once. Yeah, yeah. Unless you want to do it all the time, from what I get.
Right.
Okay, so let's get to your first song. What is your first song? Do you want to tell the story
sure.
before?
Oh, before see, or after.
See, yeah, here, let's break it down. Because, you know, either you tell the story and so the listener gets to kind of groove to that story while they hear the
Man.
Song, or you can hear the song and then come out of it and burst out with your story.
Yikes. All right, let's hear the song.
Oh, okay.
Let's do it.
Well, this and set it up for us. Which song is this?
Lou Reed. Walk on the Wild Side from Transformer.
Okay, this is Walk on the Wild Side by Lou Reed from his 1972 album Transformer.
Holly came from Miami, FLA, hitchhiked away across USA. Plucked her eyebrows on the way, shaved her legs, and then he was a she. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. Candy came from out on the island. In the back room, she was everybody's darling. But she never lost her head, even when she was given head. She says, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls go do 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 do. Once gave it away. Everybody had to pay and pay. A hustle here and a hustle there. New York City is the place where they said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey Joe, take a walk on the wild side. Sugar Plum Fairy came and hit the streets, looking for soul food and a place to eat. Went to the Apollo, you should have seen him go, go, go. They said, hey sugar, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. Alright. Ha. Jackie is just speeding away. Thought she was James Dean for a day. Then I guess she had to crash. Valium would have helped that fast. I said, hey babe, take a walk on the wild side. I said, hey honey, take a walk on the wild side. And the colored girls say, doo 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 doo.
So where, when To Whom? What does that song mean to you, and why did you pick it, and what's the story?
So it's one of those songs that, you know, I've heard for many years, you know, here and there. But the reason why it really has a point in my life that I can't let go of is that when I was done with grad school in the arts, I went to teach English in Taiwan, in Taipei. And when I was there, we were teaching kindergarten kids, you know, four-year-olds, three-year-olds. And every morning, we had to do exercise time. So it was the English teachers, there's three of us. It was our choice to put together a mixtape, mix CD, of songs to do exercise time with these kids.
Okay.
And I didn't choose this song, but one of my people I was teaching with chose Walk on the Wild Side. And it was the strangest thing because I think that's when the lyrics really hit me of what was being said. When you're doing jumping jacks and these three-year-old Taiwanese kids are singing these lyrics at you, singing about the color girls going, and you're thinking, how surreal is this?
Did you bring that up to your fellow teacher who chose the song, or did you just sit in the background and absorb the surreality?
We talked about it, and I think that it was a question of, should we do more things like that, you know, for our own entertainment? And I don't think it was, you know, in any way malicious. It's just, I think, a cross-cultural shift that you're not aware of maybe how some of these things resonate or appear
until you see it
through someone else's eyes.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, and you're like, wow, this song, there's a lot more going on in this song than I've ever thought about.
You know, it's funny because I don't want to say your eyes necessarily, but the show's eyes, because, I mean, I've certainly heard that song over the years, and I hadn't really listened to it intently, like, until just now, because I don't really listen to these songs before we do the show. I just get them ready for the show.
Sure.
And so I was, you know, all those same things were happening to me too. Kind of like, wow, this song is really sort of edgy song. And then for you to say, you know, yeah, it totally makes sense. So how long were you in Taiwan?
Almost a year.
And was that just kind of like a break from reality for you, or were you thinking of staying? Or
I didn't know what to do with my life. You know, I was teaching adjunct studio courses, you know, after grad school, trying to piece together a career and, you know, doing whatever I could, part-time jobs, and nothing was really sticking, and I was applying for full-time jobs across the country. And this was an avenue where, you know, you could make $35,000, $40,000, see the world, have an experience. And so I thought, well, now's the time to do that.
Have you ever been back? Do you stay in touch with the people who you knew from there at all?
No, I don't stay in touch, but I went back – last February, my wife and I went back, and I went back to the, you know, the apartment I lived in, and, you know, kind of remembered some of the places that.
Listen to a little Lou Reed while you were there.
I didn't. I should have, but yeah, I didn't do that.
What was the last concert you attended?
Oh man, I can't remember the guy's name. It was here, like 4 months ago or so, at the Southwest Florida Performing Arts. I can't remember the venue. I'm terrible with names and places. But sorry. I wish I could put that together for you.
What's your best concert experience?
Okay. That's easier. So best is very subjective. But memorable, a few Frogs concerts. And Frogs, no one probably –
Yeah, I was just about to say. You looked at me like – you said it like, oh, you know, the Frogs.
Yeah, no one probably knows, but – they're a band that was out of Milwaukee. One of their members is a two-piece band. One of the members died. But they were a band that was about kind of a little shocking and performative. And you didn't know if they were even going to finish a song or two. And so they had a devout following. And, you know, the one brother is a brother duo. One brother would come out in blackface. And so it's just about, you know, how far can we push the envelope?
Hmm.
You know, and
when would that have been?
Maybe early 2000s.
Okay. And they're not around. You said one of them passed
away. Yeah, one of them passed away. That the older brother, or the taller brother at least, he's still around. And he used to come out in this big bat suit and, you know, with wings or whatever, and sparkles and glitter. And
Is that vibe something that you are into musically?
You know, so this is.
I mean, you're a gallery guy. You're a theater guy.
Yeah. So this is. I think you know you're hitting on something. You know, as I was going through my list of songs. Yeah. You know, the glam rock. You know, the shock. You know, the kind of intense storytelling. You know, songs that aren't just about. You know, a groove, but they're about, you know, resonating with you, making you think, you know, challenging you.
Yeah. No, there's definitely some overlap with the art world, the theater world, that sort of thing.
Right.
When was the last time you bought music that had a physical form?
Oh, man. Another challenge. So, yeah, I gave up on that, you know, with that.
You were an early adopter of giving up?
Kind of, yeah. So I think maybe a Miles Davis. I was buying a bunch of those. Must have been 12 or 13 years ago.
Okay. Yeah. So how do you listen to music these days? Are you just like iTunes and that sort of thing?
Actually, so it was Rhapsody, but Rhapsody is now Napster.
Napster is like a thing still?
Yeah, it's a legitimate thing.
Well, yeah, it's
so you pay Napster to listen to music.
Oh.
Yeah, so Rhapsody was the predecessor.
Okay, so you like have an account on Napster and you can play almost anything?
Correct.
Kind of like Spotify, probably?
Correct. Yep, exactly.
How did I not know that? How did that
happen?
How has that not come up on this show yet? what is an album that you have to listen to all the way through if you get started on it?
Oh, some of the early Bowie albums for sure, like Hunky Dory, Miles Davis, some of his albums. There are these journeys through. Let's see, what else? I guess those are two good ones to start with.
Do you have a favorite band? Is that possible to say?
It keeps shifting, but I always come back to Bowie, and I think that's a standard. And lately, it's Scott Walker, which I didn't know Bowie was influenced by.
I don't think I know Scott Walker.
Yeah, so he's someone that I guess you know. Pushed Bowie along those early years, and so that's been a favorite lately.
You talked earlier about how you weren't singing the right notes when you were a kid.
Right.
Where does karaoke fit into your life, if at all?
It's very scary. So I do my own karaoke alone.
You what?
You know, alone
just
karaoke.
Like in the mirror?
No. I'm just playing, like if I'm playing guitar or something.
So you sing to your guitar.
Yeah.
What are your go-to songs?
Well, you know, so I appreciate that I can play Walk on the Wild Side. It's simple enough. Scott Walker, Bowie, you know, some of those formative songs, just being able to figure it out, you know.
Mm-hmm. And it's such an interesting mental process, isn't
it? Yeah, be able to – it makes you, you know, dive in deeper to, you know, understand how those things were built, you know, how they were created in the first place.
What about, you know, out at the bar with friends karaoke though? Has that ever been a thing?
I wish I had the courage to do it. I enjoy going there, but I
– It's a spectator sport for me too.
I would love it if I – so I did karaoke at a friend's house. So like a group of four friends, that's okay. You know, he had a karaoke machine. But yeah, larger than that, I just don't know if I can do that.
And so therefore probably dancing in public is not a thing either?
I'm better at dancing in public because I was never, you know, berated or, you know, scolded about how bad of a dancer I was.
But you'll get out there on the dance floor at the wedding.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. Let's move on to song number two. What do you got and how do you want to approach it?
I've talked about David Bowie enough, so we're going to listen to Life on Mars and we'll talk about it later.
All right. This is Life on Mars by David Bowie from his 1971 album Hunky Dory.
It's a god-awful small affair to the girl with the mousy hair, but her mummy is yelling no, and her daddy has told her to go, but her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream to the seat with the clearest view, and she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools if they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those gay men.
tortured brow that Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow. Now the workers have struck for fame, 'cause Lennon's on sale again. See the mice in their million hordes, from Ibiza to the Norfolk Broads. Rule Britannia is out of bounds to my mother, my dog and clowns. But the film is a sad thing more, 'cause I wrote it 10 times or more. It's about to be writ again, as I ask you to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Oh man, look at those cavemen go. It's the freakiest show. Take a look at the the wrong guy. Oh man, wonder if he'll ever know who's in the best-selling show. Is there life on Mars?
So what's the story?
About the song?
No, about something other than the song.
All right. I think, you know, this is one of the songs I've just listened to my whole life over and over and over again. And, you know, probably, you know, from whatever age, 16 on. And it seems to tug at my beliefs, you know, my skepticism, some of my pessimism, my hopes. You know, it's just – there's a lot in there and some of the imagery that it creates. And I just get lost in it. You know, it's one of those songs. It's big enough. It's complex enough. It's abstract enough. It just sucks me in. So I've never gotten tired of that. And that's a song that I, you know, have struggled to try to perfect playing on guitar and understand all the changes, the chord changes that go into it.
It seems like it takes a lot of turns.
Absolutely.
Do you play that song or do you play songs for your wife or do you have to like sit in the, when she's gone and then
both? Both. Yeah. I mean, I can play the song on guitar for other people, but to sing and play, that's where the challenge comes in. But I'm getting better little by little.
Would you say that's your favorite Bowie song or is that just the song that most resonates with you through the lens of this show?
Maybe both. Yeah. I mean, I think those early albums, the songs were more complex as he got, you know, later on, I think the songs, at least lyrically, became simpler. They weren't these long narratives, these long storytelling, you know, endeavors.
So. It came up earlier today, just coincidentally, the Tesla, you know, Elon Musk shot the Tesla
right into
space, and it was playing Space Odyssey
yeah.
on its way. I thought that was kind of poetic.
Absolutely.
Have you heard this? This is totally kind of random, but it popped into my head during the listening of that song. About 2 years ago, there was sort of – it wasn't The Onion, but it was like The Onion, one of those sort of – fake news sources that doesn't try to hide the fact that it's fake and writes things for funny reasons. And it was scientists have discovered why everything's going to hell. It was because the loss of a particle called the boson.
Okay.
That when David Bowie died, we lost the boson, and it was what was keeping the universe's shit together.
I don't know if I give him that much credit. I mean, personally, you know, he's had a big impact, or his music has had a big impact in my life, but I'm not sure if he's can get that much credit.
Did you ever get a chance to see him perform?
I did. I did once.
Where was that?
I think it was in Boston. And that was up there as, you know, that was an amazing concert. And I think what I took away from that was his showmanship. I mean, he had absolute control of that stage. And I saw Prince play as well. And those two are almost polar opposites, in my opinion, on how they managed the stage. Prince was running nonstop back and forth on that stage. Like, he just couldn't stop. And the energy was exploding. Where Bowie could stand in one place and the same amount of energy, you know, just a slight move of his hand,
right,
would push the crowd just as much as Prince running 100 miles back and forth. And that really impressed me, that he could control himself, his voice, the band, his presence to that degree.
When would that have been about when you saw him live? Was that where in the arc of his career would that have been?
So it must have been around late 90s, I think.
Do you remember, this might be a weird question, but I don't know. I know a lot of big Bowie fans, and they took it really hard when he died. Do you remember, like, when you heard?
I do remember, but I don't know the place and where I was standing.
It wasn't like a JFK moment or anything like that.
But. No. I mean, I think, the Twin Towers, far eclipsed Bowie's death for me as far as, the where were you.
Right.
So
I have one of those memories with when the Challenger blew up, because I went to high school, I was in middle school here in Florida, and we heard the announcement and we walked out onto our field, and on the horizon you could see the smoke across the state.
Wow.
It's like, woo. Well, we're turned a corner there. Where does music fit into your world professionally in terms of what goes on, at FGCU and in the other ways that you interface with the arts community?
Sure.
Is there music in there?
I wish I could say we did more, and I think we're ramping up to do more at FGCU art galleries. We work with the music department for sure. So the jazz combo will play, the string quartet will play, to support the music students, and they, add a layer of, added content to what we do at openings. But one thing we're doing coming up soon, there's an exhibition called Blind Date with Jen Ray out of New York and Neil Bender out of Tampa. And it's funny because, it's just coincidence, with the show and that exhibition. They are they're putting together a mixtape.
Oh, really?
So Neil's going to have 10 songs. Jen's going to have 10 songs or thereabouts, and we'll play those during the run of the exhibition. And part of it was that they didn't know each other. This was a way to get to know each other. It was a way to let the audience in on what inspires them. So it's very – it's interesting that, this intent kind of overlaps with the show a little bit. And then we're going to work with the jazz combo here on campus, and they're going to choose 6 or 8 of those songs from the mixtape, interpret them, create new compositions, and play those for the opening. So,
well, that's pretty cool.
That is pretty. So my aspirations are to do more things like that, mm-hmm. where we really think about music and art and performance and theater, but think about it, far enough in advance where we can integrate it in a thoughtful way.
And not to, do some booking here during the podcast, but perhaps we can get them in here.
That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be really great.
While they're in town, any idea how long they're going to be around or anything?
So
the
show opens on October 18th, and they should be here approximately a week prior to that.
Oh, so they'll be around for a little while. So it's not like they're just flying in for the opening.
No, they're going to be building the installation and creating it on site. So.
Well, let's talk about maybe a fourth song that didn't make it to your list. Did you have it whittled down to 4?
I had a tie. I was going back and forth. So I have to refer to my notes. So there was Nina Simone's Four Women, and I loved that because it mimicked Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side. So, Lou Reed's talking about these four people or these five people in his song. And I didn't realize they were real people, tied to Warhol and the factory.
Oh, I didn't either.
Yeah, so I was reading about that. And, so that he really, he met these five different people and told their story. Anyway, Nina Simone's Four Women also sucks you in that way, where it's, you know, four ways that we look at, you know, black women or women, Asian women, or, you know, anyone that's not like us being white, you know. So I'm putting myself as the us and them as the other, which I think is the point of the song, you know, to get out of that way of thinking, you know, and think about how do all these different types of people exist and what do they deal with. And so it's another song that, you know, kind of pushes you, challenges you.
What was the process?
Oh, another one, I'm sorry. The other one was Frank Zappa's Peaches and Regalia, which that song I love because WMSC is a public radio station in Milwaukee. There was, I think it was like the – it was either a blues or jazz show that would come on. And they'd always open with Peaches and Regalia. And so it just – once again, it's amazing.
So you're a longtime public radio listener.
Yeah.
What was the process that you used? Did you build up from one song that you knew was on the list? Did you start at 10 and try to bring it down?
Oh, my gosh. So I brought in this like – it doesn't have that many, but a lot of songs, a lot of artists, because as I started adding songs, it made me think of other songs or other musicians. And so the list kind of expanded and contracted over that, you know, two-month time period. And I just – in the end, I just said, okay, look, what are the songs that, you know, I kind of go back to the ones you started with, and then what are the songs that you really, you know, have stuck with you over the years, you know? So that was the process.
Where are you at musically today? Are there any new, you know, mainstream bands, or maybe not mainstream but new, that you're listening to?
Yeah, so some bands that have caught my attention lately that I think are pretty incredible. Alabama Shakes.
Mm-hmm.
Just
got a thumbs up from Tara in the booth for that one.
That lead singer, she's just incredible. Timber, which I didn't know about until the other day. And
Tara's nodding. I don't know that one.
A friend of mine said, check this out. And then Fantastic Negrito. This guy just – anyway, those three for sure. And then I'm always interested in, you know, what Roger Waters or David Gilmour are doing, you know, solo out of Pink Floyd. And, you know, so go back to the people that, you know, I was interested, like I was a big Pink Floyd fan growing up. And so, you know, where are they now? You know, kind of, and the music's still amazing.
What was that third band that you mentioned? The
Fantastic Negrito.
Is that like off-brand Childish Gambino?
This guy has been around for a while and he's had a real hard luck story. I think he got in a major car accident or something, and almost his music career, and this is me just trying to remember the bio, went sideways, and then I think he came back from it and has found some newfound success. And I think it also, gave him, clarity as to why he's making music.
Can you compare his music to someone else, just to, for our listeners' sake?
Yeah, like a combination of, you know, blues and Alabama Shakes and
Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to just put it out there into the listener universe that we are compiling Spotify playlists of all of the songs that are chosen by our guests and are recommended by our guests. So if you want to hear the song that he, or the artist that he just talked about, just go to, you know, our website and find
all
that stuff. Yeah, no, we've got an intern who's working on that now.
Be careful with the frogs. There's not many friendly frogs.
Hear that, DP? Careful with the frogs. It's time to move on to your last song. So you've gone from the early 70s for your first two songs,
yes,
as far as they're spawning, into something, you know, not super modern, but way more modern than that. What do you got?
All right. So we're going to listen to Ween, A Tear for Eddie. And I'm not a big Ween fan. I used to, you know, listen to music like that more. And, you know, that's funny, weird, kind of like, you know, off colored. But this song, it just, once again, every time I hear it, it just takes me someplace that I can't ignore. So let's hear it.
This is A Tear for Eddie from Ween's 1994 album Chocolate and Cheese. Thank you. Instrumental.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was debating on that or a Miles Davis tune. I think that was the back and forth trying to figure out which one made the cut. And lately, I think that one beat Miles out for now.
For what reason? So you're not a fan. So there's got to be a connection to somewhere, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm a fan of that song for sure.
Right, right.
But, you know, most of other – if anyone who – you know, listens to Ween, not all the songs are like that.
Right, right.
So it's just so melancholy, and it refers to Eddie Hazel, a guitar player. So it's, you know, a tribute in some ways to him. So I think he was from Funkadelic, and he wrote a song called Maggot Brain, which was an amazing song. So there's some overlap there. And I think that's, for me, a lot of the music that I enjoy. It's not just the song, but it's what fingers it has,
yeah,
you know, out into the world, and references that it you know, makes you think about. But that melody, that arc that song takes me through, I can listen to that song over and over again, you know, 10 times in a row, and just get lost every single time. And it's inexplicable. And it's a song that I must have discovered or for myself just 2 years ago.
Oh, really?
So it's just
– It's a song that's embedded itself in your brain,
yes,
recently.
Yes.
And so you had to give it some props.
It's in there, and I don't – yeah, and I'm a little conflicted because I try to enjoy Ween and what they do. I'm the, you know, like, okay, if they can do that, you know, if Dean Ween can do that, he's an amazing person. There's got to be some really good stuff. And I'm finding hints of it here and there on the other songs, but it's just so different.
Oh,
so,
it is.
Yeah.
I saw Ween once in Atlanta at an old theater, and there were something.
Mm-hmm. There was something.
and you know, if you like the way songs connect and have tendrils, next week's episode, which I can spoil because this will come out after that, is with Stick Martin, one of the two guys who made our theme song. And he and Dave, the other guy who made the theme song, met – because one of them played a Ween song, and then the other one played a Ween song, and then the other one played a Ween song.
That's hilarious.
And then Stick described it as they ended up having a Ween off,
uh-huh,
that went till 3 o'clock in the morning, because between them they knew almost 50 Ween songs.
Wow.
So this podcast has some pretty deep Ween roots.
There you go.
How did you discover it? Do you remember? I mean,
did
Napster feed it up to you?
Well, this is the fascinating thing about Napster, right? Is that you go down one path, one alley, and you don't know where you're going to end up. You know, when you go on these whatever Spotify, it doesn't matter what you listen to, but they, you know, so I do all. Every time I listen to a band, I go, okay, what are the influences? You know, so I look and try to figure out, you know, where can this one song or band lead me to? And it must have been something like that where it popped up and I hit play and then it's like, wow.
Do you think that way you like to look for the way things are connected is related to, you know, your life in art? Because it seems like there's a lot of, you know, artists who try to integrate. And you're kind of trying to tie together, you know, both form and meaning,
right?
You know, and history. I mean, is that kind of?
Yeah, I think the you know, things that surprise you, that shed new light or offer a new vantage point to see the world, and you know, that's what I really value, what I really get you know, absorbed into, and those aren't necessarily going to be the expected moments, right? They're the unexpected moments. And so to provide yourself a way to surprise yourself, to challenge yourself, to give yourself that unexpected moment, that's what I, you know, I think that's what I enjoy most in life.
Do you make much art these days, or are you too busy with the rest of your responsibilities?
So lately, that energy has been really going into, you know, playing guitar and trying to sing and you know, build that confidence and that talent and find, you know, investigate and find, you know, how these composers, how these songwriters did it, you know. So I think my creative energy has gone in that direction for the moment.
Do you have a favorite song to sing? And does answer to that question change if you're alone versus in the presence of people?
Lately, I've been singing Scott Walker's Duchess over and over and over again, playing that, singing that. So that's my favorite lately. And, you know, James Brown is a good one.
Wow, I'm trying to picture you doing James Brown. That's fun to imagine.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Which song?
I don't know. You have to start playing some and feel the inspiration, I guess. What else? Maybe some Brian Eno. There's some good early Brian Eno songs when he was writing more pop songs mm-hmm. versus the mm-hmm. atmospheric songs.
Are there any TV theme songs you can sing on demand, on command, that are buried so deeply into your brain that they're going to be there forever?
I can't do it here. Not today.
You could tell us the name of the show.
Oh, I really like the Andy Griffith intro, but that's not really a – I just like that as a theme song.
Did you ever figure that out on the guitar?
Yeah.
Oh, so you could play that on the guitar?
Yeah, that was pretty simple.
Well, I wish you had your guitar. okay, so you mentioned the Frogs was maybe your best concert experience. Do you have one?
Well, most memorable. Whatever that, yeah.
Yeah, do you have one that, that, you know, maybe your craziest concert experience or something?
Well, that might be one of the crazier ones. But, you know, what else? Oh, you know, I went to one of the early Lollapalooza, and I saw Ministry.
Oh.
And that was intense, you know, on the lawn and lots of mud and people sliding around. And, you know, and then we had, you know, the freak show on the side where people had all the piercings and lifting, you know, things with certain body parts that weighed a lot of weight. That was a weird one.
That was Lollapalooza?
Yeah, like year two or three, I think.
Oh, yeah, when it was – well, it's still pretty crazy, but yeah. Is there an album, if you had to choose one, like, you know, the whole year, you only get to listen to this one album again, is there one that would be an easy pick to be on that list?
Goodness. I think I would go to some of those Miles Davis, Bitches Brew or Live Evil. They're just – complicated enough and memorable enough. Once again, I've listened to those just over and over and over again, and you know, can get lost in those.
Do you guys play music in the gallery? Like background
occasionally.
Music?
Occasionally.
That's not part of the normal scene there?
You know, it could be. It could be.
Because I could hear some of that just quietly in the background.
Yeah.
Last question. Is there a song that you will always turn off if it comes on the radio for whatever reason?
Rush Limbaugh.
That's not a song. Although he does use like the Pretenders or whatever at the beginning of his show. So maybe it's that.
I can't think of a song that drives me crazy like that.
So you don't have a – you don't hold ill will for either memory reasons or style reasons?
No, no. And I think, you know, what I'm trying to do lately is – you know, because these – you know, these musicians have made it because they're good at, for some reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I don't always see why, right?
Right.
And so I'm trying to let go of that baggage and say, okay – Let's really just listen instead of come in predisposed, you know, the preconceived notion like, oh, I don't like that because it sounds like something I've heard before that I don't like, you know? And that's tough to do. I think, you know, we bring a lot of baggage to our experiences.
I've heard several variations on that through guests on this show. And I'm wondering if there might be something to the fact that we now have so much more access to so much more music and we're being fed things that maybe are close to or near and then a little farther out. And so suddenly you feel like you got to take it all more seriously because you can't just stay siloed up. I mean, you can, but if you're going to listen to things through Pandora or these other channels,
right,
you know,
right.
Do you think that has something to do with that?
I think it's that. I think it's – yeah, I think it's the exposure to just so much because in the past, right, you had to invest, you know, okay, I want to listen to an album. Well, it's going to cost, you know, $15 or whatever it is, $12.
Yeah. So, and you might want to just get your money's worth out of it,
right? So I'm going to make sure, hey, I want to make sure I like this music before I invest this money in it. Right. And now that investment is so low,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you can try so much more, you know, and so I would imagine that's got to have something to do with it.
All right. Any final thoughts?
You guys are doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I love the show.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. We're having a blast doing
good.
We dreamed it up. Richard and I, who, you know, you see us walking around campus. We dreamed it up while walking around campus, and it was just this big theoretical thing. And now we've done like 30 episodes, and it's just crazy. So thank you. Thank you for doing it. I'm really appreciative.
My pleasure.
We make this podcast in the studios of WGCU Public Radio on the campus of Florida Gulf Coast University. Richard Chinqui is the show's co-creator and producer. Tara Callaghan is our online content producer. Chris Duffus is executive producer. Our theme music was created by Stick Martin and Dave Cowan at Monkey House Studio in St. Pete. For my parting tune this week, I'm going back to 1982, hanging out with my best friend at the time, a kid named Mark who lived down the street. We were in fourth grade, hanging out on a weekend, and he had his mindset on getting the local radio station, Wink 96.9, to play what was his favorite song at the moment, Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, made super popular because it was the theme song to Rocky III, which had come out that same year. I was not necessarily a fan of the song, not really my vibe, but supported his effort as he dialed the request line and made the ask. Afterwards, he made us some mac and cheese and did so in a way I will never forget. After boiling the water and cooking the pasta, he proceeded to add the cheese powder, butter, and milk to the pasta in the pot with the water still in it. I tried to suggest he might not be doing it right, but he wouldn't budge. That was sort of his style. I can remember it like it was yesterday as we sat in his kitchen eating what was effectively macaroni and cheese soup as Eye of the Tiger came on the radio, him pumping his fist to the glory of it. Ah, good times, simpler times. I'm Mike Canary. Keep listening.
next time on Three Song Stories.
Do you sing? Are you a singer around the house? Do you sing?
Only to my kids and my cat.
Okay, only to your kids and your cat and your husband, probably.
No, not even
wow,
him.
Wow, there's a line there.
No, he's a critic.
Wow, that's funny.